Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. If we can do a roll call, Mr. Winters.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Coos.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Edward Marley.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode. Eugene Montgomery. We have a quorum.
Jeez. Thank you. First item on the agenda is the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board on an item that's not on the agenda? Next item is the adoption of minutes from the January 23rd, 2018 meeting.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I second, but I have a modification.
Yes, sir.
Under item 9A, policy matters, committee appointments, legislation and rules, committee members and chairs, board director staff to contact Peter Leeds, certified home inspector, and Douglas Polk, JD, to invite them to participate. I believe I took on the role of chair of the organization, or of that committee.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Marley. So you moved with a modification?
Yeah.
Or he moved. You moved with a
modification? Yes.
Okay. Are you okay with the requested changes?
Yes.
Okay. Do we need any discussion on the minutes? All in favor of the minutes as modified? Say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next item, 4B, is to amend the December 2016 board minutes as it relates to case P17-018 for Michael Sanchez. What we have is audio of the meeting, of that meeting. Didn't know, were we planning on playing that today, Patty or Mr. Winters, or no?
I don't have any.
Okay. And I believe the issue is that the minutes from that meeting don't reflect the fact that the board has a policy that we offer to consent for 30 days, and if it's not signed, it will advance to formal hearing. I don't think that was captured in the minutes, even though it's been discussed in the past. So we wanted to bring that up for discussion.
We did find the minutes in which the board approved that language to be included, but that was a while ago, so it's probably a good idea for all board members to be aware of. So essentially, we automatically, in order, if you offer a consent agreement, if they don't sign the consent agreement, it would go to hearing after a period of time.
Should we have any discussion or any...
Did a question come up regarding that he wasn't noticed the 30 days? Is that the problem?
I think Scott had a question about it, how it came up that...
Well, the minutes generally reflect that when the board issues a consent agreement, that if it's not accepted within X amount of time, the matter will proceed to complaint notice of hearing. In this case, the minutes did not reflect that. The approved minutes did not reflect that, although the audio supported that, and the board policy included in under board packet item 4B, December 2016 minutes, under D on page, looks like page 26 of the packet, the board adopted, quote, adding the language, if not accepted in the 21 days for the formal hearing, to all consent agreement motions. So that is a policy the board has adopted, and so it's just really tightening up tying up loose ends in proceeding with the complaint notice of hearing. I realized they hadn't been completely amended, so I'm doing sure that the board amended the minutes to reflect.
Yeah. And my only question, Mr. Scott, is it, what's the appropriate, is it to amend the minutes or is it to amend the offered consent?
Well, the offered consent included the, if not accepted, within.
Got it. Okay.
Amend the minutes to reflect.
Okay. You just want confirmation that what the board has hired was to do that. Okay.
I move that we amend the December 2016 minutes to include the vote to complaint notice of hearing if Mr. Sanchez, agenda item 61, page 3, did not accept the consent as specified in the audio recording of the meeting.
Second.
All in favor of amending the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We do have a lot of people here today, so I think I'm going to try to go through cases where people are here first, except that unless anybody has any concerns, I thought we might be able to consent items under 6B. The complaints proposed for resolution by letters of concern. You do have one?
I have one item. It's 6B2.
Okay.
I have to recuse myself on that one, too, so.
Okay, we can pull that one out.
So I move that we consent items 6B1, 3, and 4.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor of consenting those items?
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we consent 6A's 1 and 3.
Okay. 1, 3, and 4?
1 and 3.
Oh, 6A1 and 3.
Yeah, there is no 4.
I have a question in 6A3.
Oh, I thought it was 2.
They actually relate it. Which is my bad. I hadn't realized that earlier.
Okay. All right.
But they're related.
6A1 then?
Yes. Do we 6A1 is the case of Greg Galowich about a non-registrant doing a report for State Farm Insurance on failure analysis of appliances. Do we have any discussion on the item, or did you make a motion to approve dismissal?
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of dismissal?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chair, clarification on our previous vote of consenting 6B, 1, 3, and 4. Did we actually vote on the item?
We voted on consent. I think we. I don't think we voted to issue letters of concern on that. We should, I think.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that under agenda items 6B, 1, 3, and 4, that we issue letters of concern.
Second.
Okay, the motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So we'll try to address items for people who are here. To that end, we're going to move to case 6C2. This is case number P17096. Orion Architecture and Brett Thorne, non-registrant, related to, in reference to Willow Creek Apartments in Prescott, Arizona.
Is this C2?
6C2.
Two. Okay, I need to recuse myself from this one as well.
So, Mr. Madison, take a seat, fill out your conference call. And if there's someone here to speak on this case, would you please come forward?
Esteemed members of the board, my name is Spencer Profit, and I represent Mr. Thorne, Orion Architecture.
Okay. Is there anybody else here for this?
He's here. He's present.
Okay. Thank you. Let me just summarize the case. On May 2017, the board received a complaint alleged that the respondent and his firm provided professional architectural services and a report of investigation for the Willow Creek Apartments without registration with the board. The respondent represented himself as an architect and used the title of principal architect in the report of investigations without registration with the board. We have a summary of all the events. And then the investigative conclusion is that the respondent violated board statute 32.145.1, that he practiced, offered to practice, or implied that he was qualified to practice a board-regulated profession without registration. Respondent violated 32.145.2, and that he advertised or displays a device that indicates he's registered or qualified. Okay. And that the firm engaged in the practice of architecture without firm registration. Mr. Craven. Ms. Soto?
We have the alleger here as well as one of the EAC members who's out on the committee.
Okay, thank you. Do they wish to come forward and speak to the board? Or do you just want to be present? Either way is fine.
Per page, you're on claimant. Glad to speak.
Thank you.
Dan Demlin, EAC member, I would like to speak.
Thank you. Absolutely. So I would suggest that maybe we start with the alleger who filed the complaint, then move on to the respondent in the EAC.
Thank you. My name is Kirk Hayes. I am the claimant in the matter. I represent DECA Construction, which was the general contractor for the project. What we allege that Mr. Thorne did is that Mr. Thorne advertised himself as an architect to the owner of the project. The owner of the project then hired Mr. Thorne as an architect. His architectural company, which he advertised as Orion Architecture, to come to Prescott and to inspect the project and to prepare a conformance report, in essence. Mr. Thorne then went to Prescott. He inspected the site. He went to a number of site inspections. He prepared a report. So the reports are under the name of Brett Thorne Architect. They're under the, on every single page of the report, some 150 times or something like that, it says that it's done by Orion Architecture, and he submitted that report to the owner. The owner then provided that to DECA, saying, this is an architectural report prepared by an architect reviewing your work with issues with it. According to the billings that we later received, Mr. Thorne also met with the owner a number of times. Because DECA received this, there are things is that on every project need to be fixed, and there are things that need to be fixed, but things that were certainly not appropriate that we believe on that. So DECA was forced to hire its own architects to go out and perform its own investigation and defend itself. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes when somebody with authority tells you you've got a case, people push ahead. And the unfortunate result of all of this is we're now involved in very extensive litigation that unfortunately brought in all of the subcontractors. I don't raise that to say that issues, I don't want to get into the merits. I don't think that that's before you, but to just say that there has been a incredible impact because of Mr. Thorne's representation that he was an architect telling the owner of the project that as an architect he believed that certain things existed out of there. Once after we filed the complaint, we began to do some digging, and when word gets out that something's going on, people come out of the woodwork to tell you, and it turns out that this is not an isolated event for Mr. Thorne, that he has been involved in doing this on numerous other projects. We've submitted numerous other reports to the Arizona Board of Technical Registration's excellent investigation team. He has appeared as an architect expert witness on numerous cases in Arizona. He's been deposed. I think one of the most interesting ones that you will find is that a number of years ago he was deposed and asked if he was an Arizona registered architect. Since he was testifying about a project where he was providing architectural services in Arizona, he said, no, I know I need to get that done. I've downloaded the paperwork. Here we are seven years later, and that was never done. We believe that that violates, as the board, as the committee found, the law on the unauthorized practice of architecture. Indeed, the statute, Arizona 32-101-B2, says that a person shall be deemed to practice architecture who in any manner represents that the person is an architect or is able to perform any architectural service or other services recognized by educational authority as an architect. Mr. Thorne did that in this case. He advertised under the name Orion Architecture. He represented on the reports that he was an architect. He told people that he was an architect. His billing statements said that he was billing based upon being an architect. Mr. Thorne was clearly practicing architecture without a license. I think that one of the things that is most concerning about this, probably from the board's perspective, is a few years ago, the Arizona Board of Technical Registration indicated an intent to be able to register people who are acting as expert witnesses in matters where they represent that they are an architectural expert. The board has passed regulations. R430-301 says that no expert can work on a contingency fee. If you're not a licensed architect in Arizona like Mr. Thorne is, there's no reason why he can't come in and work as a contingency fee, and there's nothing that this board could do about it. R3304C2 also requires that a licensed architect in Arizona sign and seal all dispute resolution and mediation documents. That's to give this board authority over what they do, to make sure that you can police the quality of the work and the kinds of things that are going on. As an unlicensed person coming into this state, he is skirting around that, the board's authority on that. That's why we believe that this has an impact. I mean, it's had a devastating impact to us, but it has an impact broader than that. In a nutshell, that's the basis for our complaint. I'm glad to answer any questions at the board.
To your knowledge, is he a registered architect in the state of California?
He is. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your input. We can hear from the respondent or his attorney now.
Thank you, esteemed members of the board. Mr. Thorne would like to thank you for your time today and the time you've spent reviewing the allegations in this matter. We recognize and respect this board's role in ensuring that members of the public are not misled and in holding members of the various regulated professions to the highest of standards. We want to reassure the board that we are anxious to cooperate to uphold those standards. Mr. Thorne has taken to heart the board's concern with the use of the term architecture on litigation or pre-litigation reports and has taken steps to ensure that the correct nomenclature is used on any report issued now and in the future. If the consent judgment before you addressed only this issue, Mr. Thorne would happily sign and provide whatever reassurance you need in order to uphold the board's proper role. But the proposed consent judgment goes further and inhibits Mr. Thorne's ability to practice as a construction consultant and registered contractor, which he is in the state of Arizona. The findings of the Enforcement Advisory Committee, while well-intentioned, express a misunderstanding as to what constitutes the practice of architecture, as well as the constitutional principles of the separation of powers as it relates to expert witnesses in litigation or pre-litigation matters. We are here today to uphold those constitutional principles and to ensure that any consent judgment in this matter, if any, provides Mr. Thorne with reasonably clear guidelines for future work within the permissible scope of his role as consultant and expert witness in Arizona courts. The complainant in this matter was never misled. He has worked opposite Mr. Thorne in countless lawsuits and was always well aware of his qualifications. He does not pursue this complaint to uphold the board's legitimate concerns. He uses the board as a tool to obtain an illicit advantage in pending litigation and future litigation. Mr. Thorne is not here because some innocent client was duped. He is here because he is good at his job. Mr. Hayes does not complain because he was misled or has concerns about the proper scope of the practice of architecture. He complains because Mr. Thorne, as a contractor and consultant, is very good at pointing out construction defects caused by Mr. Hayes' clients. Unfortunately, Mr. Hayes seeks to undermine Mr. Thorne's ability to properly practice within these qualifications by twisting constitutional principles and perverting the purpose of this board. Mr. Thorne's consulting practice is not the practice of architecture under Arizona statutes. ARS 31101B7 defines that practice as any professional service or creative work requiring architectural education, training, and experience, and the application of mathematical and physical sciences and the principles of architecture to such professional services or creative work. Arizona courts have interpreted this to say it is not whether some or all of his services might lawfully be performed by an architect, but whether such functions are necessarily embraced within the scope of the statute. That is, that they must be performed by an architect. Mr. Thorne's work here was in the scope of his role as a general contractor and construction consultant. ARS 32-1102, involving the work of general contractors, allow such professionals to directly or indirectly supervise construction, which includes evaluating whether construction meets contract documents or applicable codes. General contractors do this every day, whether they're working on a job or supervising others who are working on a job. Indeed, other members of the Enforcement Advisory Committee found this work within the scope of a general contractor and entirely proper. Two members of the Enforcement Advisory Committee were asked to render preliminary reports before the interview. One of them found that Mr. Thorne was entirely within the scope of his role as a construction consultant. The other expressed concerns with the use of the term architecture and indicated that additional information was necessary from the architect of record on the project, Mr. Fergus, and there is an Arizona architect of record on this project who supervised Mr. Thorne and to whom Mr. Thorne reported. Other general contractors perform this work all the time. We have submitted reports for your review prepared by other general contractors, many of whom are hired by Mr. Hayes, one of whom was hired by Mr. Hayes for this project. He clearly doesn't object to the scope of work being performed by a general contractor. He objects to Mr. Thorne performing it because Mr. Thorne is good at his job. He is good at pointing out the defects of Mr. Hayes' clients. No one was misled by Mr. Thorne's work. We've submitted a declaration from Mr. Thorne's client who indicates he was well aware that Mr. Thorne was licensed in California and not in Arizona. His CV was provided along with his rate schedule when he was hired by Cole Johnson or Paul Johnson Drywall in order to perform his work. In the context of litigation, I do not know if any of you have had any experience in litigation, but Arizona is a pioneer of disclosure obligations that do not allow the parties to hide the ball. When you disclose an expert report, you have to disclose a CV and the expert's qualifications. That is part of the gatekeeping function that the Supreme Court has adopted, as is proper for its role as the gatekeeper of litigation evidence. No one was misled by Mr. Thorne. Everybody knew exactly where he came from and what his credentials were. Trying to prevent Mr. Thorne from engaging in this type of work raises grave constitutional concerns. Article 6 vests the disposition of evidentiary issues with the court, specifically with the Arizona Supreme Court, to create rules that apply to the use of evidence and expert witnesses.
Mr. Prophet, not to interrupt you, but we're not discussing the litigation case here. So if you could please focus on the specific facts of the case and what the consent agreement and the EAC found, I'd appreciate it.
The complaint, sir, does raise these constitutional issues. The report was generated in the context of pre-litigation procedures, and there is a litigation going on. If this board does find that Mr. Thorne is practicing architecture in violation of the rules and regulations promulgated by the Arizona State Legislature, that implicates grave separation of powers concerns that are in the Arizona State Constitution. I understand that there's a representative of the Arizona Attorney General here, and I think he would be interested in understanding the constitutional principles at play here, sir. Article 3 soundly establishes the separation of powers and requires those powers to be separated. The courts determine what is proper and what is improper in terms of who can serve as an expert witnesses and the reports that they generate. The legislature and the executive, of which the board is a part, should allow the court to execute that essential function. Case law throughout the country, in Arizona and elsewhere, recognize that expert witnesses may be registered in a state outside of Arizona. Arizona medical malpractice statutes, for example, expressly raise the potential that a person who serves as an expert witness may be licensed or registered in a state other than the state of Arizona and provide proper testimony in Arizona courts. Mr. Hayes himself has used countless out-of-state experts, and we have submitted sample reports for those out-of-state experts for this board's review. That is entirely proper within the context of litigation, as the Arizona Supreme Court and the rules that it has promulgated has allowed for that sort of report. The fact that Mr. Hayes uses out-of-state experts on a regular basis also illustrates that he is not concerned with Mr. Thorne's status as an out-of-state registrant. He is concerned with the fact that Mr. Thorne is good at his job. He is good at pointing out the defects that Mr. Hayes' clients are guilty of. And when he creates a report such as he did in this case that is well within the scope of his licensure as a general contractor, not as an architect, but does not involve applying the mathematical sciences or principles of architecture to construction, that any general contractor licensed in the state of Arizona could have created. He is not engaging in the practice of architecture. He's willing to take to heart the board's feelings regarding his use of the term architecture in his business name, Orion Architecture and Construction Consultants, which is the full name of the business. And he has established new business entities to perform work in Arizona that does not have the term architecture in it. He's willing to refrain from using the term architecture in any reports prepared in Arizona. Again, if these were the only issues addressed by the consent judgment, Mr. Thorne would happily sign. In sum, Mr. Thorne did not engage in the practice of architecture as defined by Arizona statutes. Multiple members of the EAC recognized this, and to hold otherwise raises serious constitutional concerns that this board should consider very carefully. Mr. Hayes is not raising concerns because anyone was misled. He and Mr. Thorne's clients knew exactly whom they were dealing with. He did not file this complaint out of any concern for the practice of architecture. He himself hires contractors to perform this work. He filed this complaint to use the board as a tool to gain an illicit advantage in litigation. We respectfully request this board not condone the use of such a practice and the use of this board, and consider either dropping or substantially revising the consent judgment at issue. Thank you.
So you've made, said the word construction and contracting a lot, right? A lot.
Right.
So why didn't he sign his reports as a under his general contractor license?
Hindsight's 2020.
Well, not really. Pretty made a big deal about this. He's a licensed contractor here. Why didn't he say my licensed contractor number under his signature?
He reported
as a contractor, not use the architecture. Why don't we have a different letterhead that says construction on it?
But we do believe that the use of the term architecture was appropriate according to the rules promulgated by the Supreme Court. We understand the board's concerns, and we have incorporated those into Mr. Thorne's future practice. We think that an architect is allowed to provide expert testimony and expert reports in litigation matters under the rules of the Supreme Court. Looking back, we understand the concerns here, the concerns with misleading the public, and we are dedicated to changing that practice in the future.
So I did find in the... I'm sorry.
2020
hindsight.
So in the EAC report, it says that the respondent admitted that if he had done this work in California, he would have sealed those documents. If it was just pure contracting work, why would he seal those documents in California?
It's a case of exactly what the case law that I mentioned speaks of. It's work that can be performed by an architect, and that seal would add additional credence to the work. But it's work that can also be conducted by a general contractor.
Okay. And the issue the AC found about him using wrong codes because he was used to California, IRC codes instead of Arizona, does that make it important to be understand the Arizona principles of practice of architecture?
No, sir. I believe the board may have misunderstood there. The codes that were used for the report were the codes that were set forth in contract documents. So it was a matter of evaluating the work under the codes that were set forth in the contract and making sure that it met the requirements of the contract.
Okay. I had a couple more questions, but I'll pass it on to others in a minute. Was he hired, Mr. Thorne, as an expert witness from the start?
He was hired as a consulting witness, and in the practice of litigation, there's two different types of experts.
But his initial engagement? What was his initial engagement as?
His initial engagement was as a construction consultant.
Okay, not as a expert witness or litigation?
The lawsuit had not been filed. It was clearly moving towards a lawsuit, and there was anticipation that he may serve as a testifying witness, but that was not his original engagement.
Okay, and the work he's done for the last 5 years in Arizona, has he always been engaged for litigation purposes?
Always, with the exception of this matter.
Okay. And sorry, that last one, Ed, and I'll open up to you after that. You stated earlier that the consent agreement was restricted his practice of as a construction contractor, and I fail to see why that is. If all the consent agreement says that he shall not practice architecture or hold himself out to be an architect in Arizona?
It has to do with what the board is considering the practice of architecture. If the report that he authored here meets the definition of the practice of architecture, regardless of whether he uses the term architecture, then moving forward he has very little guidance on what is appropriate and what is not. If the consent agreement was revised to make it very clear what he can and cannot do in the future, there would be less reason to object to it.
Wow, I think it's crystal clear.
I do too.
if you're a practicing architect in any state in the United States, it's crystal clear what you can and can't do.
There isn't anything in this findings of facts that's going to limit his ability to serve as a construction manager or give expert testimony on the construction side of his profession. It's just the use of the name and practice of architecture in the state of Arizona. There's nothing else that I read into this that limits his ability to do anything except practice architecture.
That's the concern, sir. The way the findings of facts and conclusions of law are set forth in the consent judgment, it encompasses more than simply his use of the term architect or architecture. It indicates that he practiced architecture simply by authoring this report. And to the extent it can be read to encompass just reviewing plans, determining whether they meet the contract documents or applicable codes, then it does restrict his ability to practice as a general contractor. And we would like that clarified in any consent judgment that's at issue before we can agree to such a consent judgment.
I guess I'm having trouble really reading that far between the lines here.
And
there's a real easy out here for him. It says, don't do it until you get registered with this board. All he has to do is file an application and follow that process, and he'll be licensed. He can get licensed in the state of Arizona, which helps clarify it a lot. He produced a document. Said Orion Architecture on the top of it. He signed it, principal architect. He's not an architect in this state. I can't go into California and say, I'm an architect. I could say, I'm an architect in Arizona or in Kansas or wherever else I'm licensed, but I cannot say I'm an architect when I'm in the state of California, because I am not. So I'm having trouble. I just don't see anything in the language here that prohibits him from coming in as a general contractor, whereas he is duly licensed in the state of Arizona, issuing a similar report under whatever name he wants to give his company, signing it, Mr. Thorne, general contractor, and issuing that document. I don't see anything in this consent agreement that prohibits him from doing that. So I don't see any need to modify the consent agreement.
Yeah. If anything, I think the penalty is too light. I mean, it's 5 years of... bring in the same signature, same title block, same proposed service to the public, and we're with three violations, and we have a penalty of $3,000. I did have one question, maybe for Deborah, Ms. Soto, or Patty.
Or can the EAC?
Oh, we have to hear from the EAC first as well. Yes, let's do that. Mr. Medlin? Mr. Demlin? First of all, thanks for serving on the EAC.
Thank you.
Your time is appreciated.
It is an honor of mine to serve my industry this way. Before I begin with my prepared notes, I'm going to do some dangerous and deviate slightly because I want to clarify something. I've been with the EAC since 2001, so I've done this a lot. Typically, I've done the role of an assessor where I get a case and write it. This particular one, I sat on the committee itself. We had two reports. There appeared to be some misinformation here I want to clear up. One of the people who wrote the reports was supposed to be at the committee hearing and failed to show. So, for the record, the assessors, for both assessors, were not at the EAC. I was. To begin, I want to clarify, January 16th, I marked a great day in my life. 40 years of practice. 16 years old, I walked into an architect's office, and I've never left. I've worked with this board extensively prior to my registration, to gain my registration, and afterwards as recognized through my EAC membership. My understanding, the board's premise for practice is exercise of judgment constitutes practice of the profession. Practice of the profession is regulated. I am a forensic investigator and a specification writer, so to me, words have meaning, very specific meaning. As an assessor and an EAC member, I always want to try to bestow benefit of doubt on any respondent because I believe everyone can make a mistake and a mistake should not be punished in equivalency as intent. In this case is all about meanings of words and nothing else. As I prepare for each case, I always research central issues. And one of the things that I found out in researching this is some courts in this land, and I'll let lawyers figure out what that means, but I found reports that some courts in this land actually limit the common expert's testimony versus the professional expert's testimony. This case, the respondent is a registered architect from the state of California, one who should understand at least the practice requirements from his home state. At the very least. The respondent stipulated he understood those and acknowledged that in California, this was regulated practice. He failed to submit any evidence to us to prove that he had contacted the board and found that Arizona had a different interpretation in his home state. On his own admission, he never consulted the BTR prior to doing this work. The respondent was unable to give a valid reason for his consideration that Arizona was different from his home state. These are all steps of due process of due diligence that he should have done before taking on anything here. And he failed them all. The allegations, as was read, is he represented himself as an architect in violation of ARS 32-145-1. He did work. He advertised as an architect in violation of 145-2 and failed to have a firm registration in violation of 141-A. I will not speak for any other member of the EAC. I can only speak for myself. The evidence was overwhelming to substantiate the respondent gave no real defense to this. In fact, it was so overwhelming that I did something I've never done before. I not only substantiate all three, but I gave maximum severity of 10. That I've never done that before. By the respondent's own admission, he was practicing in what he knew was a regulated practice in his home state of California, yet failed to carry any consistent logical thought or action process through the work he was doing in Arizona. An action I can only justify as an act of deceit, plain and simple. I offered him opportunities during questioning to give me something to grab. Give me something to grab that shows benefit of doubt, and there was nothing. The respondent perpetuates a muddy defense from the very beginning of his actions because on pages 3 through 7 of his initial response, the respondent starts using a smoke-filled defense using the term registered contractor and licensed architect no less than a half a dozen times. Neither one is correct. Arizona licensed contractors and registers professionals. I'm not going to stand here and say I know the difference. Let lawyers figure it out. What I do know is the legislature defined them differently to connotate the different roles. And maybe that substantiates some of these other courts that says a professional opinion has more validity than a common expert. I don't know, but those would be things that we could look at. If the respondent had been registered in Arizona, he might have even been accused of violating AAC R430-301-6, inappropriate application of technical knowledge. The report that he sat on stated that it was the 2008 IRC. May I please, for those of you who don't understand, the full title of that code is the International Residential Code for One and Two Family Dwellings, and I'm just an architect. I counted 8 in these buildings. Whether the jurisdiction accepted it or not, it was a wrong code. I can tell you one reason why we use that code, because it's still part of the old legacy codes, which were prescriptive standards. It makes it very easy for me to point out construction defects. The IBC, which is the code that should have been, is a performance base, and it leaves a lot more gray area because of its performance base. I have grave concerns about the quality of practice. I'm going to let the lawyers, as you heard, argue about should he. The fact is he used the word architect. I remember when I start my career, I couldn't even say architectural drafter. Even though I would say I'm non-registered, this very board said, you can't use the word architect because you're not registered. He used it many, many times. In closing, what I want to state is that this was such an egregious case that I would almost encourage the board at this point to consider in 32-145 filing the Class 2 misdemeanors, because it's so countless that a criminologist might even find grounds for a more severe case, because this was deliberate and there was no defense or justification given for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Demlin. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Demlin? Thank you, Mr. Demlin. Any discussion?
Can I add one thing?
If you can make it quick, if you can keep it to a minute or two, please, then yes, absolutely.
Does Brett want to say anything?
I did want to say that with respect to the 2008 IRC, two of the buildings are duplexes, so they're two families home. So it certainly would be, even irregardless of what the plans say, two of the buildings would be under the IRC.
This is primarily to address the concern raised that nothing in the consent agreement would prevent Mr. Thorne from doing such work as a registered contractor. And if you look at paragraph 7 of the findings of fact, it states, the committee found that respondents' review work and his preparation of reports of investigations that addressed conformance to the drawing and specifications prepared by the architect of record on the project constituted practice of architecture. That language standing by itself would prevent him from doing any similar work as a registered contractor or otherwise as a construction consultant, and still avoid the conduct that is found in this consent agreement to be the practice of architecture. I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
So where was that again, please?
Yeah, I don't understand.
Where was that again?
Paragraph 7 of the findings of facts.
Page 1361 of the packet.
And Chair, I guess I have a question. Is that because he used the title of architect versus contractor here?
What the finding was, what this says is that the finding was that he practiced architecture. Because he reviewed the work that addressed conformance to drawing and specs prepared by the architect of record, basically because he used judgment to interpret compliance with the drawings.
And I think, I'm not an architect to know whether that's true or not, but...
But had he issued that report as a general contractor versus an architect, would that be acceptable? And I believe it would.
I don't think we'd be here.
Yeah, we would be here.
That's right.
But he used the term architect, and that's the issue.
Yeah. Well, but so that brings up a distinction. I mean, is the consent because he led people to believe he was an architect, or is it because he actually practiced architecture?
If I can address Mr. Donald, that point, Dr. Angel, under paragraph 7, there are actually three bases given for finding a practice of architecture. One is that respondent reviewed work in his preparation of the report, addressed conformance to the drawings and specs prepared by an architect, and that constituted practice. The committee also found respondent represented himself as an architect by using the term principal architect in report investigations. And the committee further found respondent was offering architectural services because his firm, Orion Architecture, was listed on documents produced by respondents. There are three different bases given.
Right. And so I believe, I do think we have a responsibility if we're able to. I don't think it changes the conclusions of law. He can't practice architecture. And I think the definition of what's architecture will be on the merits of each individual case that comes forward in the future. But for this, we have three findings. One, that he represented himself as an architect, as Mr. Donald said. The other one is that he had a firm that said architecture and wasn't registered. The third one is that the work he did was architecture work. And I think that's, I guess I'll look for guidance from you guys, the architects on the board. The AAC members seem to think that it was architecture based on, you know, having to distinguish between building codes and having to interpret the drawings, but I don't know. So, I mean, thank you.
To that end, I don't know if it helps, but when I took that report to our expert team, they said there were parts of it that could be reviewed by a contractor and parts that had to be reviewed by an architect. And so we were required to hire an architect to review.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak a little on this. This is my primary...
Sir, approach the table. You can come up, please, Mr. Thorne, and state your name.
I'm Brett C. Thorne.
Thank you.
My primary concern here was, I read this as saying that only an architect is allowed to look at plans and specifications and building codes and look at construction and determine whether they're in conformance with that. And I really couldn't accept that because I think that that should happen at many more levels. Obviously, professionals should be able to do that. But I think that general contractors need to do that in order to perform their function. They have to look at plans and specifications. They have to look at their own construction. They have to look at the construction of subcontractors, see that it's all in conformance. I also believe subcontractors have the same duty to be able to do it. And I would bring it down, you know, certainly to the tradesman level. A journeyman in any of the trades should be able to look at plans and specifications, should know the codes, and should be able to look at their own work and now the work of other tradespeople they're working with to determine conformance with those. And so that's my concern was that. Reading this third thing is that's only the practice of architecture. It, to me, would look like slippery slope.
Thank you. And I do agree that, I mean, not all inspections obviously need to be done by registrants. There's inspections that can be done by people without registration. Not for public works, but for other projects it could be done. The question here is, did the work have to be overseen by an architect or be done by an architect, or the weight that was given to the work, was it because it was architect prepared?
Well, regardless, it was overseen by an architect, an Arizona architect, if you recall. But I won't belabor the fact.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say I just got to sort it out a little bit.
Take your time.
I think we have to look at it in the context I think we have to look at it in the context in which the services were offered.
This helps much.
And the report was given. The report was given under the Orion Architecture letterhead. And the report was signed by someone who purported themselves to be an architect in the state of Arizona. I think that being it, Yes, the review of the drawings and specifications for conformance, or the review of the work and the report of the investigations that address conformance to the drawing specifications did constitute the practice of architecture because the report was issued under the letterhead of someone who purported to be themselves to be an architect.
Who is an architect in California,
who is an architect
but not
in California.
Here. So when we do reports and we're offering a professional opinion, we're required to stamp it.
I could go out and do a roofing inspection, and there are roofing consultants that are not a non-regulated profession, but they do work, and people hire them to do inspections on roofs, and as long as they say roofing consultant, they can do a roofing report. Mr. Jones can do a roofing report, but when Mr. Jones does a roofing report, and it says Jones Studio on the letterhead, and Neil Jones, AIA, at the bottom, he has to seal it and sign it, because that is the practice of architecture, and he is issuing a professional document. So I don't see it. I think we're getting way into the weeds here. And trying to read way too much into this, and I don't see it.
Changing.
I see it applying specifically to
this context.
This context, it was the practice of architecture.
And I think a different weight is given to a report that's prepared by, you know, roofing consultant than registered architect. I mean, in some sense, the client could be relying on this report by an architect as opposed to the architect of record, because he already had a professional look at it, as opposed to if he knew it was just a contractor, he would still go back to the architect of record to review things or do other tasks. So I do think that changes the circumstances here.
And they said in hindsight they would have done it the other way, put it under a contractor's name.
Okay.
But that's not what we're looking at.
We
ready for a motion?
I'm ready.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
The as I read through the background in this, there's a history of this practice. There was a report issued by another attorney representing other projects where this Mr. Thorne provided expert witness as an architect. So it's not just this project. There is a series of projects where he has done this for as expert witness, presenting himself as an architect over the last, I think, 5 years. So I think the civil is light in that respect, and I think it should be potentially doubled.
Yeah, we do have to. The expert witness issue is going to come up later in the meeting today.
Yeah, yeah.
About whether people need to be registered or not to be expert witnesses. Be a little careful with that at this point. There are enough violations to double the penalty. I do think part of the question depends, do we want to resolve this quickly and make sure Mr. Thorne understands what his duties are, or do we not? And I'm okay either way.
I guess I was prepared to make a motion to offer the consent agreement as written.
And if not signed?
If not signed within 30 days, move to formal hearing.
Time out. So why aren't we considering doubling? There's three violations.
We can. But, you know, if we have three violations and we offered a maximum penalty, there's not that much incentive to sign the consent agreement. Consent agreement is typically a carrot and stick type thing.
They're already indicated they're not going to sign it as is.
That's right. They can prove it.
I think we're making a good faith effort to come to a resolution.
Yeah.
And if they're not willing to, then we will move to hearing. But
okay. Well, I look at the EAC report, and it is the severest rating that they can give. Mm-hmm. It's very strong. I think comparing it to other EACs, when we have the ratings of 10, which the EAC uses, 10 being the worst, that warrants the maximum penalty just in itself. That's what the EAC is telling us. So.
Okay. Well, we have a motion on the table.
Don't have a second yet.
No second. So.
I'll second it.
Okay. And then I think we can have more discussion, or we can vote it up or down and have a revised motion if that's better. You know.
But this is one case, though, right?
So what's the maximum for one case? Is it 3,000 or 6,000?
We have three violations. 2,000 each is the maximum.
We're doing half that.
Again, I just want to reiterate the packet that we have in front of us. Mm-hmm. The examination by the EAC says this is extremely severe. I'll make a motion.
We have a motion on the table. But, you know, everybody can vote us.
Yeah, I mean, we can either vote on it or I can...
revise it?
I can amend it.
I think it'd be higher. It should be higher.
If everybody's up to thinking that it should be higher...
Well, something that I'm looking at is just... Yeah, because we do have three violations, right? So that's the... Okay. I think I'm convinced, Mr. Chair, based on the severity of the allegations, I'll amend my motion to increase the civil penalty to $6,000.
Second.
No, Mr. Jones, not Mr. Noel. No. Mr. Noel needs to...
I'll second it.
Apologize, Mr.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I guess for the sake of discussion, my only thought is, again, if we're offering the maximum penalty, what's the point of doing consent? If I were him, I would just go to hearing. And obviously more violations can come up during the hearing, but still.
That's fine. I think we have to relate it to EAC and the severity of their review.
Okay.
Be consistent.
Okay. We'll vote on it then. The motion is to offer a consent agreement with a $6,000 penalty, and if not signed in 30 days, go to hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Madison, still with us?
He's taking a nap.
Okay. I do apologize. It appears we have some people who signed up to speak on items that we consented. I did not have the sign-in sheet in time, so that's my fault. Is there anybody here who wants to speak on cases 6A1, Greg Galowitz, 6B1, Ray Jackson, 6B3, Mark Dorman, or 6B4, Robert Kill? Okay. So nobody wants to speak on those. And again, I apologize that I didn't get this earlier, but...
I just signed in after we did it.
Okay. But I appreciate that. Okay. Next item is 6C4. I believe there's people here for that item. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So this is case number P18020, David Escalante, non-registrant, and Delta Architectural Design Services, non-registered firm. This is about three projects in the Phoenix area where we received a complaint in August of last year claiming that the respondent fraudulently used the seals and signatures of an architect, a mechanical, an electrical, another electrical, so four registrants on three different projects in the Phoenix area. We have the investigative details. Mr. Hunt is here if you have any questions of him.
C4.
The conclusion was that the respondent violated statutes by using those seals. It also concluded that the respondent practiced architecture and engineering without registration with the board. So we have a consent offer of assurance of discontinuance, a civil penalty of $20,000, and cost of investigation of $535.
It says
$2,000. Mine says $20,000.
Mine says $20,000. Does that mean it's $10,000?
It says $2,000.
We'll pay the $2,000.
Staff recommendation?
Are you looking at
the right one?
Okay. 6C4. So let's hear it.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe it's only Mr. Escalante here on this case? Or if you can identify yourself?
Yes, this is Marcos Garcia Costa. I'm the attorney for Mr. Escalante. And as you saw in there, we have had conversations with Mr. Khan with regards to this issue. And Mr. Escalante, I've had a lot of conversations with him explaining the situation. He understands that. He has discontinued that practice. He understands, and, you know, we have definitely moved away from doing that. That's why we decided to move forward in the direction of a consent agreement. The only request we have from the board is on the, you know, it's, you two brought something up on the numbers. So the 20,000, it's, we understand there needs to be a penalty, and he understands that too. It's just the 20,000, it's going to be pretty difficult for him to cover that. And also there's the timing. I believe the standard terms are 12 months, so if we could work on both sides, you know, a lower penalty and a longer period of payment, we would have an agreement that Mr. Escalante can sign.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Is there any discussion? Mr. Hunt or Patty, can you guys discuss how you arrived at the recommended penalty?
Yeah, it's based on some passport action of registered action using another registered seal. We needed a fine of $1,000 for that one project. This is a gentleman, non-registered, 8 different uses of 4 different registered seals on 3 different projects over a period of time. Non-registered firm, he practiced both engineering and architecture. So that's where we came from in that.
Okay, so.
We looked at 8 different uses, max of 2,000 per, because it was very deliberate. Taking someone's seal and signature and reapplying it. And then the practice of firm, his practice and firm's practice on 3 projects. So we rounded out at 20.
And my other question is, you know, for those projects that were built, presumably?
Yeah, that is correct. The majority of them went forward.
And so they've been built with fraudulent seals and without, you know, design from an architect. Has there been any notifications to the owners or any, you know, revisions or review of the drawings or, you know, to mitigate concerns?
I believe there's been notifications. I don't believe there's been any concerns or any necessary reviews for those ones.
I could be persuaded of a slightly lower penalty if we can mitigate the public safety concerns. That I worry about that. We have all these projects out there who were done without any oversight.
And Mr. Escalante is open to help with the, if there's any mitigation that needs to be done as a result of that. This is not an excuse, but he tried to limit whatever he was doing to basic designs. He wouldn't go into like foundations it would be mostly installations and modifications in existing structures.
Is he here?
I know Mr. Escalante couldn't get released from his job. He's working, you know, he needs to be working in order to be able to cover whatever we come out of here.
These are very serious allegations.
And we understand.
Did you encourage him to find the time to be here?
I did, but it was almost impossible for him because of the workload that he had. He's working as a draftsman right now, so he doesn't have a lot of flexibility on his work schedule or workload.
So is he working at Delta Architectural Design?
No. That was the company that he was using. Now he's working under, you know, basically. Working for somebody that is an engineer or an architect. North Phoenix, to be more precise.
What's the status of the 4 engineers who had their licenses used?
Are they here?
Do they know?
They know.
They know?
Yes.
unhappy?
Yes.
I bet. Chair, can we ask for some corroboration whether or not those owners were notified? He said he thinks, he wasn't sure. Is that appropriate to ask for confirmation?
We can work on that. Let me, I'll work with Mr. Hunt and go close the loop with Mr. Escalante and that.
Okay, thank you.
Because I think that's critical, yeah. And if there's some way to make reparations to them, I know that's a little bit beyond our purview, but that, Mr. Garcia, and I appreciate that you guys have been straightforward and not trying to hide anything at this point, but I mean, when I saw this case on the agenda, I thought this was a criminal case, and that we should refer it to the AG for prosecution.
Yeah, no, I understand your concerns. So we're trying to resolve it as much as possible within this jurisdiction.
And personally, I think the $20,000 is generous.
Yeah.
For as many, you know, I mean, these are the jobs that we know about, you know, that have been a case brought. Now, I mean, extending the time period out, I mean, I'd be willing to entertain that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think $20,000 for the fine on this is more than generous for what was actually done. You know, this wasn't a mistake. This wasn't, you know, accidental. I mean, this was a deliberate action to use someone else's seal fraudulently. And we can assume that this gentleman got paid on all of these jobs. So I would think his fees for, you know, 3 TI jobs, complete jobs, would be, you know, extensive.
Said, are there any other projects that we don't know about?
22. He said there was 3 more. That's 6,000.
3 more.
I mean, you rounded it at 20.
Oh, it could be 22. I mean, you could do the max for the firm practicing and him practicing, and then the max for the firm registration. So it could be, I don't know, 30 to get to 28.
Mr. Garcia, are there any other projects that the board has not been made aware of? Beyond those 3, that where he used registrant seals?
So there's one other case that was in the same time frame, and we're still reviewing that. So I want to emphasize the fact that it was in the same time frame. So it's not that, you know, we got caught on this one and we continue doing that. The whole behavior was discontinued from the, you know, and the moment that he was aware of.
That he was gone.
Okay, so we may be getting here again in a few months, but I want to deal, depending on how that other one goes, but I want to be dealing with this one first.
Does it involve the same professionals?
No.
Okay.
It's a different complaint that came in after this one was in the process.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I can see how we should add an element to this consent that the owners be notified by certified mail that what happened in the board's resolution of this item.
It can do the penalty and refer to the criminal?
Mm-hmm.
You can do both.
You can.
That wouldn't be part of the consent agreement.
Correct.
The consent agreement is a consent agreement. That would be a director of staff.
Be a staff director.
Be a two separate.
We want to consider increasing the penalty above the 20. This is about the most egregious thing I've ever seen in my 4 years. And the fact that he didn't show up.
No, Frank's really concerned about not being able to... get for you work, and it's in a tough situation to tell your boss that you need to go to
So where he's working now, they don't even know about this, do they?
They I think they do. I don't know all the background on his current employment, but you know, he's just trying to move forward with his life. So we're basically asking for the most lenient approach to this. This is really, needless to say, this is really throwing his life into complete disarray.
I'd have to agree that this is the most lenient approach. What's on the the sheet here. But I wouldn't mind extending the time frame, but...
Yeah. What would you extend the time frame for?
Was it 12 months? Is it 12 months now?
So 12 now.
Is there a precedent? Something of this high? How many months? 2 years? 3 years?
You've seldom gone this high. I have seen you go out 2 years, if it's particularly. The longer you go, the more cost comes back to the sports and other things to consider. Having a stout person track somebody for 3, 4, 5 years. We have a monitoring person. So you're continuing to invest in making sure this remediation happens. So 2 years would probably be reasonable.
I was thinking 20 months.
I would think 20 months or 2 years.
2 years?
I was thinking 2 to 3. But
at least 24.
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, 20 some thousand, he's going to have to come up, even with 2 years, $1,000 a month.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, I know, but you got to remember, this guy got paid on
I know.
Four jobs that we know of.
This that counted,
fraudulently counted got paid flagrant.
In the investigative conclusions, I counted 14 violations.
Yeah.
It's 28,000.
Yeah. So, we go with 20, I think the amount is adequate. I think the time frame, you know, but once again, like Patty said, you don't want to extend these things out.
No, I don't want to do 5 years or anything like that. That's not a part of
the chances of, you know, I think if we keep it at a more condensed, but you know, two years would be reasonable. I think it's generous as well.
I think it's generous. Yeah.
All right. Maybe 20. I'm not hearing a motion.
20 months.
I guess I have another question. I'm worried about the fallout of all of this. On those, I mean, we can notify those owners, but I'm looking at it from the liability risk exposure that these registrants have been placed under now, because it's, let's say, the sushi restaurant, somebody slips and falls, and they shotgun a lawsuit, and they sue everybody, including the architect. The architect had nothing to do with that project, but his seal is on it, and it's saying that he took responsibility for it. And
he has to get an attorney. He still has to get involved, but
it's going to cost him money.
It's going to cost him money.
And I guess, is there a mechanism that we can do to somehow rescind that? I mean, we need to protect these folks from this egregious act. I'm just really concerned about that.
If this is turned over to the Attorney General's office, can they provide some kind of a buffer if litigation does come?
Well, legally speaking, anything would be taken care of. If somebody were to sue the Love Chocolate restaurant and the architect, that architect would immediately come in with, you know, the board investigation and say, hey, look, that wasn't me, that in fact was done without, and he would be dismissed out immediately. He wouldn't really, legally speaking, have any problem there.
He wouldn't even need an attorney. He just comes in with a...
Right. Technically, could he incur some costs such as having to get an attorney? Absolutely. There may be some incidentals that way, but there's no real way to, you know, unless you, I don't even know legally if you can go back and eliminate the initial drawings and substitute new drawings.
I'm just trying to think it through want to make sure these...
My concern is more along the lines, say there's, a fire or something, and the fire exits are not designed right, or whatever, or there's structural damage to the building or electrical damage, and, you know, the owners are damaged by it. What's the recourse? I mean, they paid somebody to design it correctly, a professional, and it wasn't. So, but I do think to some extent we notify them, and then they can pursue whatever they feel is appropriate with Mr. Escalante.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, if they're notified that this was used and they're well aware of it, it would be their job to hire an attorney and go after these businesses and say, we're not responsible for this and do whatever. I mean, that's kind of out of what we have to do.
Court.
As long as they're notified that it happened, the ball's in their court to take care of the rest of it. If it was me, I'd notify my insurance carrier and I'd notify, the building owners and all this stuff that, this was fraudulently used, notify the city. I mean, they're the ones that issued the permit. But it's really their job, not our job. If they do nothing, that's on that.
I think it is our job to notify.
Yeah, I agree.
If something happens, and we knew, and we didn't do anything about it,
I agree.
They're as good as they are.
I agree.
Mr. Angel, is I will verify with Mr. Scalante what is the status of the knowledge of the people that did these projects. From some of the from the document that I've seen, it appears that everybody, because this came from the city, I believe it came from the city, so those people and the architects are in the know. I will verify that with the level of knowledge and extent of communication that they have received, and will provide it to Mr. Hunt.
Okay. Right. The complaint. I think the easiest thing to do would be just to add a provision that they need to be notified and sent a copy of the signed consent agreement via certified mail or something like that. That way they know.
Yeah. So you're talking the owners, the registrants, and the city.
And the municipalities.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the case was brought forth by the city of Phoenix, so I mean, you know, they're the ones that actually threw up the red flag.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we offer a consent agreement to the respondent encompassing the following order, and if not signed within 30 days, going to hearing, an assurance of discontinuance, a civil penalty in the amount of $20,000 payable over 24 months, cost of investigation in the amount of $535, and that, can we build this into the consent that they would notify, and then that the respondent is to notify municipalities, the project owners and the registrants of this course of events and provide a copy of said notification to the board.
And if not accepted in 30 days?
Yeah, I already said that earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
Just one comment. Do we want our guy here to send that note, or should we send it from here?
I think it's on them.
It'll be part of the consent.
It's a part of the consent agreement. They have to do it as a part of the consent.
Right. Just like the fine or the cost investigation. Or
now, that's going to be done within 30 days, that part of it?
No, they have to sign the consent within 30 days. I think we can give them, it might be a good idea to give them a certain amount of time to notify all those people via certified letter. Within 60 days of signing? It's 30? I don't know.
15. I think it's something that needs to happen right away. So I would say
order would be great.
Yeah. I think within 15, I'll amend to say within 15 days of the signing the consent agreement.
Second.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, what happens if they don't sign it? I mean, it takes a while to go to hearing and everything. Then should the board step in and issue these notifications just as a protection of the public health and safety?
Yeah, I think at that point there would be nothing wrong with the board notifying the parties.
But we would notify that it's under investigation. If it goes to hearing, there would be no resolution of the case yet.
No,
but well, they would have already entered consent. At that point, the hearing would be for a violation of the consent agreement.
Oh, yeah, I thought Mr. Marley was asking if they didn't sign the consent.
If they don't sign the consent agreement, I think the board should still notify the parties within the bounds of what the board is able to do regarding confidentiality prior to something we're doing the plaintiff's hearing. So we may not be able to until after the extension, after the time period for entering the consent has passed. But at that point,
that's what I was speaking to. So after the 30 days they don't sign, can we at least take some action to notify?
Notify at that point that there is a case that is going to be filed.
Correct.
Not the conclusion, but that there is a case that's going to be filed and taken.
Correct.
At that point, request further information themselves.
Yep.
Is it just a case or the conditions of the case?
No, it would be a case.
Yeah,
just like a name of a...
Well, if a consent agreement is not entered into, then the matter will automatically proceed to complaint notice of hearing state. At that point, then confidentiality rules affect what can and can't be disclosed. More can be disclosed at that point, but we still won't have a final resolution case, so we can't notify that he practiced without that he used somebody else's. We can only say that there's an allegation. The complaint has been filed for an allegation that he used other people's seals. That certainly would put somebody on notice that they would want to check and work and then. And then upon conclusion of the case, we could certainly then provide a resolution.
Well, I can see that dragging, man. And nobody really knows.
Well, we can still notify people, like you said, that there's a case pending, and whatever's been on the agenda, I think it's public, what's been agendized today. So, they could find more about the case. We just wouldn't have a determination on it.
There's actually a law that says that if there's a complaint pending, the public has a right to know that there's a complaint, what the general nature of the complaint is. So it would fall under that.
Okay. I'm satisfied. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Let's have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Garcia.
Chair, I have a related question.
Yes, sir.
We had talked about passing this on to the Attorney General's office. Is this a separate motion?
It would be a separate motion. Yes.
No, it's just staff direction. It's just staff direction. We don't even need to make a motion.
Okay.
So we direct staff to pass this on to the Attorney General's office for possible criminal prosecution.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Okay. I believe there's people here for item 6C5.
Yep, that's the one.
This is the case of Anna Isari. Is she here?
She's a call-in.
Oh, she's a call-in? Do we have a specific time? Or just, do we want to call her now or just do the people who actually showed up and are here?
People
and
are here.
Okay, let's move on to case 6C6. Lane Garrett, PE Electrical. Anyone here on this case?
Yes.
Okay. So this is Lane Garrett. It's in reference to Outer Limit School, Southern Arizona Productions, Family Vision Square, and a total of 7 solar projects. The synopsis of the complaint is that it's alleged respondent might have signed and sealed professional documents related to those projects that were prepared by a non-registrant. We have details of the investigation, and we have a staff recommendation of a consent agreement with a letter of reprimand, $2,000 penalty, and cost of investigation of $272. So, if you would please state your name. Good morning.
William S. Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. He's the respondent. Mr. Garrett, thank you for being here. Is there anything you'd like to say to the board?
Yes, there are several things I'd like to state. One, there were no problems with any of the 7 project drawings as far as correctness. They were properly stamped. There are no errors on the drawing discovered or made. Those drawings go to the construction people. They go to the authorities having jurisdiction for approval. In fact, they are requirements. There were no faults in any of that. The one place where apparently there is a fault, and I don't know, Jeff, if you want to talk to this.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead. Was that back in the 80s, there was an amendment to the law that whoever stamps a drawing had to actually do the drawings themselves, in other words, be a draftsman, or have a draftsman in his employ. I was never notified of this. and I've been a PE in Pennsylvania by exam. Moved out to Arizona in 65. In 66, I was registered here. I've been registered for 51 years. I've had some correspondence from the Board of Registration, primarily minor things like when they stopped sending out cards every year, the stamp had to have expires at a date written on it. So I've been in the impression if there was any major changes made to the laws that I would be notified. It turns out that I, and I'm sure many other PEs, are still under the old idea that when you stamp a set of drawings, what you are endorsing is not the draftsman. What you are endorsing is what those drawings say to anybody that can reasonably read those drawings and follow them. From that point of view, I did no wrong. The requirement that I had to do the drawings myself or have a draftsman that did the drawings under my employee was totally unknown to me. And I do not see that as a reasonable requirement. Case in point, I have not paid my re-registration fee this year. For the simple reason is I don't intend spending thousands of dollars to get AutoCAD, learn AutoCAD, and do my own drawings when people in the industry are not used to paying for somebody else to do drawings for them. In addition, a single person, as far as business goes, and in the past, I had businesses with draftsmen, but I do not have the money to go out and hire a draftsman. So I've just decided I'm out of the PE business. There's no way for me to make any money with these requirements that I was unaware of, and I believe most of the industry is unaware of. The consent agreement infers that I did wrong, that I did what was unethical. I cannot sign the consent agreement because it would be unethical for me to sign it. I'm agreeing to something that I believe is not true. Yeah. There was no harm done to any customers. I found, in retrospect, that the individual who brought the drawings to me to sign and go through and approve, and there were a few changes. The drawings were of, I would say, at least average quality compared to other sets of drawings I've seen. So I didn't have a major problem there. There were some changes made properly. And I had no collusion with that individual. I'm not dealing with him anymore, with what I learned from Jeff. And he did some things that were improper. But to my knowledge, he didn't do anything improper on these particular seven jobs. The drawings were correct. Nothing that would harm the end customer or anybody else. So that's where I am today. I was charged in the articles of consent that I did some things that were unethical. I cannot agree to that. I've been a PE for over 50 years in the state, paid in every year. Never had a complaint. I've had businesses. I've worked for Motorola for years. Never any problems in the ethics area. I've taught ethics. I started out after college teaching ethics, moral leadership standards to the U.S. Navy at the Naval Air Development Center. I've been an arbiter for the Better Business Bureau, where ethics come in frequently. I've written a two-semester course on photovoltaics, which is my expertise. And in that area, I've taught ethics. I believe I know what ethics are after the number of years I've spent in industry. I started electronics in the 50s. And I cannot sign something that infers that I did something that was unethical when I didn't know, and nobody that I was involved with received any harm. Jeff,
thank you, Mr. Garrett.
Incidentally, I'd like to thank Jeff. He's been very helpful and spent a lot of time with me on this.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Mr. Hunt, anything you want to say?
I think it's evident by the report that this case came from Mr. Dwayne DeLarco's case last summer. I don't believe Mr. Garrett didn't intend to deceive anyone. It was proved that Mr. DeLarco lied throughout his investigation. He had stated to me that Mr. Garrett met him in Tucson at the project sites, when in fact Mr. DeLarco came to Mr. Garrett's house. Mr. Garrett did review the plans that Mr. DeLarco did draw and did stamp them. Unfortunately, those were produced on Mr. DeLarco's title block, his unregistered firm. And that's where this case has come from. So.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the board? Yes, sir.
Under the findings of fact, number two, it says the respondent is a civil engineer. Are you electrical or civil?
I'm electrical.
I'm electrical.
No civil.
What's your findings of fact?
Scott.
What page?
Page 3, line 18. On the consent agreement.
2527 in the packet.
Oh. Okay. Oh, I stick it correct.
Yeah.
Oh, it says it on
his tree.
Yeah. Page
3,
line 18.
That wouldn't print as I guess from my perspective, I understand everything you said, Mr. Garrett, and I apologize that you ended up in that situation, but obviously, you know, ignorance of the law doesn't make it right, doesn't make it go away. And that law that we have, that you can only stamp your drawings or your work or the work of your bona fide employees, and bona fide employee means several things, I'm not going to get into it, but your sub-consultants and other things could be included in there. The main issue is, for you to be able to be responsible of the drawings, you can't be working for a non-registrant, because otherwise, you know, they can make changes with all your authorization, they can withhold payment from you if you don't do what they want you to do, and other things. That might not be what happened on this case, but that's why that requirement is in place, and it has been for a long time. I think that's the challenge we have, is that obviously you didn't have any ill intent, but it's still, I think, in my opinion, it's a violation of the statutes.
What I'm looking at is we have no assessments, no EACs, and then we end up at a consent agreement. I'm really inclined to think that, I'm going to move that we dismiss the case. There's just not a lot of information here.
Do we have a second to dismiss the case?
A second to move it on. For discussion.
I can't support dismissing the case personally.
No.
I mean, the violation took place. There is enough information to know that the violation took place. I mean, we have 7 project drawings that have the other title block with his seal on it. And I think he admitted he worked for Mr. DeLarco. He stamped the drawings for Mr. DeLarco. Yeah, I think intent is a mitigating factor, but it's not a canceling factor.
There's an email from Mr. Garrett to Mr. Hunt, November 6th. Yes, Dwayne paid for review of the drawings and the stamps. So I think it's pretty clear that it's an aiding and abetting issue.
Unintentionally, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we have a few options.
I can withdraw that motion.
I'll withdraw a second.
Yeah, the motion's withdrawn.
Thank you.
Can I make one qualifying statement?
Yes, sir.
I did not consider that I was working for Mr. DeLarco. The thing that I did was review drawings, make comments as to the correctness, in a couple cases some minor changes, approved, properly stamped the drawings. So that's what I've done in other cases. Many other PEs have done the same thing. And I'm a little disappointed that something that can change a person's business so drastically, as I know it took place back in the 80s, but if this was a major change, it should have, notification should have been given to all registrants that there's a major change in the laws. I never received that. I've had very, very little communications from the board. And the only communications I've had was changing the stamp and signing the date and no longer getting a card every year.
Understood. I think you have a good point in there, but let me be clear. What you did is illegal by state statutes and rules. It has been for a long time. So it's not changing the practice today. And ultimately, it's every registrant's duty to understand the statutes under which they practice. I do think, you know, Patty, maybe this would make a good article explanation of what you can seal and not seal for the next newsletter and what a bona fide employee means, so that everybody can understand it. But so,
may I ask something again? Absolutely. Why do I not get newsletters?
We do send out newsletters to the address of we're doing it by
email.
We do not send by mail.
We have over 40,000 registrants now, so the newsletters generally go out by email. If we have an email, we would be happy to make sure you are listed.
I've been listed for over 50 years with you.
Do you have an email on file with us? That's what we need from you.
I should have. I don't know.
We'll find out.
So he reviewed somebody else's drawings.
And stamped it.
He wasn't a specified employee.
Right.
Basically plan stamped it.
Yeah.
This guy was just buying a stamp.
Right.
I mean, so I think our options are to either, you know, offer some sort of consent similar to what's in there, and I understand Mr. Garrett may not want to sign it, so that's one option. Another option, this would be up to you, Mr. Garrett, is you've said that you don't intend to practice under the current rules. If you wanted to, instead of a monetary penalty and the other things, to voluntarily surrender your license, I would be okay with that, too. I'm not asking that you do that. I'm just saying that's another avenue if you preferred. I don't know what other avenues we have.
From a business point of view, I do not plan to renew this year. So effectively, that is surrendering my license. I do not plan to practice anymore.
Yeah, and one of the stipulations,
consulting in other areas which are unrelated.
One of the stipulations of the consent order would be that he has to maintain his license.
Or we can have a voluntary surrender.
Right. No, I'm saying, but as this is written right now, he would have to renew.
Keeping in mind that if he doesn't renew his license, he retains that license for 3 years and could reactivate it at any time. So, you know, it's not a good choice to not take an action, presuming the person will not practice for the 3 years until they're canceled.
Okay. We've been there.
Yeah.
So I think those are two avenues, is, you know. And the third one, Mr. Garrett, if you don't think you would sign any of those two agreements for sure, I mean, we could directly move to hearing, and then an administrative law judge would decide the merits of the case, not the board.
I'm not sure what is in the consent agreement, whether it's the same as the last one I read or whether you want to modify some things. I do object to a $2,000 penalty that was in there.
That's because still in
again,
there.
I don't think I did anything morally wrong with the information that I have been given.
Yeah. Can we offer two potential consent agreements, Patty, for Mr. Donald, and then have him see if he would sign either one or no?
I would ask that the board specify.
We give them two options.
Yeah, the board can offer two consent agreements. I would ask the board really be specific about the terms of each one so that there's no question of overlap, so that we know exactly which one, should you decide to accept one, which one the terms are attached to.
Okay. And as far as the one that's on the table, I would actually be okay lowering the penalty because it was not, you know, purposeful. But I would exchange, in exchange for lowering the penalty, I would require Mr. Garrett to take a board statutes course or exam to make sure he understands the statutes of the board.
Because we don't have a board exam.
Statutes.
Okay. Some way to understand board statutes.
I can do a voluntary surrender.
Okay. If he's okay doing that.
As far as understanding the board statutes, I'm not going to be practicing anymore.
Okay.
I think that's where I would do that.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. I think that's helpful to understand. Thank you.
Mr. Garrett, do you understand you would be agreeing to the findings of fact when you surrender?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we offer the respondent, Mr. Garrett, a consent order encompassing voluntary surrender of his PE electrical license.
And no cost of investigation or penalties, right?
No, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
So
second. And if not signed?
Not signed within 30 days, move to formal hearing.
Okay, so the motion on the table is that we modify the proposed consent. I think as Patty stated, the findings of facts and conclusions of law would stay the same, but the penalty, instead of being monetary, an investigation would be that Mr. Garrett voluntarily surrendered his license. With that understanding, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Garrett. We appreciate your time. Okay.
One thing on that last one, make sure when you guys issue the new consent agreement that you change that one line.
Yeah, the civil to electrical.
It's civil to electrical.
Yeah. Good catch.
Mr. Gilmore.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's move to item 6D2. If there's someone here for that item, this is the P18022 Robert Kennedy RLS.
He's outside,
I'll go get him. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Actually, as difficult as these are, they've been going pretty well. It's been good discussion.
62. We already signed it.
Yeah, it's the one.
Are you good?
Actually, the G1 and 7-3.
Yeah. But he's here. Okay.
Signed ones.
This is, again, agenda item 6D2. Robert Kennedy, related to the survey of the southeast quarter of Section 16, Township 21, North, Range 7 East, GSNR. On September 8th of last year, board received a complaint alleging that the responding failed to apply the appropriate knowledge and skill while providing professional services as land surveyor on the above-named project and conduct that survey in accordance with the Arizona Boundary Survey minimum standards. So we do have, the details of the investigation. The conclusion is that respondent failed to apply technical knowledge and skill. and failed to conduct a boundary survey in accordance with the minimum standards. Respondent has been cooperative throughout the investigation, and the recommendation which the respondent has signed is letter of reprimand, probation of registration, but that's suspended, peer review, remedial training, an administrative penalty of $1,000, and $572 in cost of investigation. So, is it Mr. Kennedy? Is that you?
Yes, sir.
Would you please state your name, full name for the board, complete name for the board,
Robert
full name?
Houston Kennedy, Jr.
Thank you. And is there anything you'd like to say?
Not really. I came to listen. I've said enough in my life.
thank you, Mr. Kennedy. We appreciate that. Does the board have any questions on the concern? As I said, Mr. Kennedy has already signed. We're on the same page.
I don't, and I would move that we accept the signed consent.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We can now move to item 6D3. If there's someone in the audience for that case, I thought there might be. This is Desert Fire and Services, LLC. Case number is AL18001. This is related to three projects in the Phoenix area. Synopsis. On September, the board received a complaint alleging that the business provided alarm services, including installation monitoring of alarms, for three projects without a controlling person registration, without business and controlling person registration with the board. You have the synopsis. The conclusion is that they didn't have a controlling person or a business registration. We have a signed consent with letter reprimand, $500 penalty, and investigation of $227. So, if you'd like to please state your name for the board. Mr. Sizek, thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say to the board?
Mr. Chairman, the alleger, I need to call in, so before...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries.
Go ahead, please. Thank you, Kurt.
I will be largely unavailable beginning February 26th through March 2nd. For monitoring, please call 1-800-318-9486. Again, 1-800-318-9486. For assistance of any other nature, please contact our office at 480-247-9117. Again, 480-247-9117. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
At the tone, please record your message. When you finish recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
This message is for Paul Skaggs. This is Kurt Winter at the board meeting, trying to contact him. We will try you again one more time. If you do not pick up, then we'll proceed. Thank you. You want me to call him back, or?
No.
Okay. We should start the discussion.
It's too long.
Okay, I think it'd be better if we held the discussion until we... Let's try him a second time. If there's no answer, we already left a message. We can move on. But
reached the voicemail.
All right. I think we did what we could.
Yep.
Okay, Ms. Isaac, would you, and I see somebody else signed up for this item?
Kenny.
Kenny, okay.
This is my
Okay.
your motion.
All right. Well, if you'd like to say anything, please come up. If not, Ms. Isaac, if you can state what you want to say to the board.
I'm good.
You're good?
Yes.
Okay. That's a long discussion. Okay. Any discussion from the board on this consent agreement? As I mentioned, Desert Fire, Ms. Isaac, have already signed a consent agreement.
I move that we accept the signed consent.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Well, thank you, Ms. Isaac. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to move to item 6E1. 6E1.
6E. Echo.
Echo 1.
Echo.
Because I believe there's somebody in attendance for this case as well.
Messy.
Mr. Lamb and Mr. Paulson.
Mr. Paulson stepped out for a brief moment, if I can look at him.
Absolutely. Should we, I think we also have someone here for 6E3. Maybe we take that one first and come back to this one?
I think it's 6E2 as well.
There's people here for 6E2?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So let's do that. Let's take, I apologize, we'll take 6E2 first, or E3. 6 Echo 3. This is the case of Michael Williams, Home Inspector 38045, case number HI18-10. It's regarding a home inspection at Nicolet Drive in Tucson. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent may have failed to report on the condition of the HVAC system, faucets, pool lights, and roof. We have the details. And the EAC found that the registrant failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with standards. Respondent was cooperative. And I think that the recommendation from the EAC was a letter of concern, but staff is requesting guidance from the board in this case. So I think it'd be appropriate if you please state your name for the board and say what you'd like to say, and then maybe staff can tell us why they want some advice.
Well, my name is Michael Williams, and I'm very familiar with the EAC process, having served on about 50.
Wow, thank you.
So when we first came to work here in January of 2000, anybody remember Ron Dalrymple?
Oh, yeah.
So Mr. Dalrymple gave us this talk about being able to take off one hat and put on the other.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in here with two hats. I have my respondent hat, and then I have my EAC member volunteer hat on. In essence, I believe that the EAC, has anybody ever sat through one of our EACs, home inspectors?
They're lively. Not home inspectors.
They're quite lively. And there's always disagreement on how things are to be interpreted. I was terrified going into my EAC because I knew one of the guys on there. I knew it would not come out of there unscathed, no matter what. And I thought it was fair. I thought that the system worked. We have a rating system that actually we inherited because the Rules and Standards Committee put it together. And I think the concern is that a lot of my ratings were ones. if you read the definitions that were read to us as to what a rating 1, 2, or 3 means, I feel like this was fair. But I'm open to questions.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Kramer, did you have anything to say?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the reason why it was submitted to the board for your recommendation, my understanding was in the January meeting, which I was not here, a similar case came up in which there were a lot of, or more than one or two deficiencies, and the thought of the board was questioned the reason for the letter of concern. And so, as is the case with Victor Williams, there are a number of deficiencies, although they are de minimis by nature, and the vote was a one, we thought we would present to you for your guidance.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion on this that we issue a letter of concern to the respondent just to address the report deficiencies in the future.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion?
Yeah, just a quick discussion item. I think that having some kind of recommendation in front of me would be helpful as a board member. Does everybody feel the same way rather than just a question to the board from the investigative staff?
To give you some history, this actually is going to be another discussion at the Home Inspector Committee and with some EAC training. You'll have complaints come into us, and during the course of the investigation, allegations that were not included in the original complaint arise. And as staff does this investigation, it finds violations of law that were not in the original complaint. And those have been weighted somewhat differently. You know, what's in the complaint given more weight than what arises during the investigation. So these are before you this time because that really needs to be reevaluated, and it will be reevaluated as we go forward.
Well, for the record, I think the staff has done a great job in the past of identifying that to us and coming up with their recommendations, and we look at them and evaluate them and pick them apart and just, you know, agree with them or not.
Argue about it for an hour.
Yeah.
So. That's just the history. We're going through a period of time where we were needing some input from the board, that we are addressing it.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case in this one, but I do believe that we should weigh things the same whether they're reported in the complaint or not, because, you know, in the interest of protecting the public, they don't know what they don't know. So just because something wasn't brought up doesn't mean that it's de minimis. In this case, I think it is, so perfectly fine with a letter of concern. And Mr. Williams, thank you for volunteering on the AC. That's appreciated again.
We have a vote?
We haven't had a vote yet. I was just thanking him. So we'll have a vote on the letter of concern. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Dr. Angel, thank you. Committee, thank you. I've never seen this site before.
Okay, let's go back.
We will now go back to item 6E1. So, this is case number P18006, John Paulson from Providence Development, and this is in reference to multiple lots in the Barcelona subdivision. Synopsis is that in June of last year, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent fraudulently applied the seal and signature of James Weaver and another civil engineering registrant on special geotechnical inspection certificates and on special structural inspection certificates, professional documents, and practice engineering without board registration and through respondent firm, a firm not registered with the board. We do have an investigative summary, and the conclusion was that the respondent violated statutes and that he fraudulently applied the seal and signature of two engineers on special geotechnical inspections and special structural inspection certificates. Investigation was not conclusive on whether respondent had violated 32.145.1 and ARS 32.141. So we have the documents in front of us, and I'd like to also ask everybody who wants to speak on this case to please introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is John Poulsen with Providence Development.
Thank you, Mr. Poulsen. Is anybody else here to speak on this case? Tommy Lamb?
Yeah. Tommy Lamb is up here.
Tommy Lamb is also here.
Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say to the board, Mr. Paulson?
The method of putting this in the sweat box is working. Am I ready to concede to anything?
Sorry, that's not the intent.
Can't.
I would like to just make a comment. I know what the allegations are. Really simply stated, what happened here is as we were building homes in our Barcelona subdivision in Phoenix, which was a fairly large subdivision, so it started a long time ago. There is a document that the City of Phoenix wanted to have provided for them, which is this special inspection certificate. It's not really a technical document. It's just a document that was stamped by an engineer that said, we think this inspection needs to be done, and we believe this is a qualified company to do that inspection. And in the case of Mr. Jim Weaver, the company that was put on there was his own company. Whenever we submitted for a building permit, the City of Phoenix wanted a copy of that document. And so we would make a copy of that document and submit it to the city. And they were happy with it. As long as they were happy with it, we were happy with it. Apparently, at some time, and I don't know how or how the communication took place, I would imagine it would be something like the City of Phoenix saying, hey, this document says Barcelona on it for the whole subdivision. We want to have you put it, make it addresses specific for each lot. And so where it had Barcelona, we would put in the address of the specific lot we were submitting for the permit for. So it wasn't that we were trying to do anything fraudulent. In fact, I think the way this whole thing even came to light to the knowledge of Mr. Weaver was the City of Phoenix about a year ago was changing the process and they wanted to new documents and new forms. And Tommy contacted Jim Weaver and said, hey Jim, we need your help. This old form we were using of yours isn't working. We're going to have you stamp a new form. And Jim Weaver said, what form are you using? And he said, well, the one you stamped 10 years ago, and they've been taking it ever since. And it's not like we were taking a form from Barcelona and using it in another subdivision, or like we were taking a form that was from for a certain lot in Barcelona and using it on a different lot. It was a form that Jim Weaver stamped for the whole blanket community in Barcelona, and we were just using up on each individual lot as we were pulling from it.
Why wouldn't the city keep that one master document on file and refer to that for the project?
That is a good question. I have no idea why they would not have done that.
Well, I have a couple of ideas on that, and you know, I'm not a structural engineer, but obviously things change over a period of 14 years. I mean, yeah, it was a subdivision where you were maybe going to build single-story, 1,600-square-foot homes, and now you're building, you know, custom, you combine lots, you're building custom 4,000-square-foot homes. You have a new building code. You have different soil conditions in different parts of the subdivision. I could see why the city would want a separate certification. Not all the slabs are the same. And like I said, over 13 years, a lot can change.
Well, the thing with this form is it's not a certification form. It is a form that this person is going to perform inspections on the site. So Mr. Weaver, who according to this form owns or Alpha Geotechnical, is that
yes,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then he stated that Alpha Geotechnical is doing the inspections on the grading and excavation and filling of these lots, and that's correct. So did Alpha Geotechnical, owned by James Weaver, actually do the inspections of these lots?
That's the interesting thing about this, is that no. We always hired a firm, a professional firm, to come and do the inspections. But that is kind of part of the fault of this whole thing, laid with the City of Phoenix, because I don't know why our decision was not to use Alpha Geotechnical. I mean, I've used Jim Weaver for things for years, and he was a good friend and an associate. But back at the time we started this, I had a fairly large company with a lot of employees, and why they decided not to use him, I have no idea. But they're using a different company, and the irony of this is that the final inspection of the home, our superintendent would give the final inspector this document saying, the geotechnical inspection was being done and suggesting or recommending the geotechnical, and we were giving him the actual inspection done by a different firm, and City of Phoenix was fine with it and never said anything and never looked at the two to say, oh, these don't match. Had they done that ever, we would have caught this.
You're saying for each lot you did hire somebody else?
We did. For every single lot we hired a company to do the inspections. So it's not like we were looking for a way to shortcut anything or save anything. This didn't do anything to win us anything other than it was just the process that seemed to work with City of Phoenix as we were proceeding for the permits.
Well, and that, you know, that's obviously a fault on the City of Phoenix inspector's part. But for the registrant, for Mr. Weaver, he has a document that is stamped here that was used to submit to get a permit that says he has determined that the types of work checked below require inspection and the individual or firm named below are qualified to perform the inspection.
He says that they are a qualified firm, exactly.
Right.
And why?
But they're not the ones that did the inspection. So every single one of these lots that has, you know, that has the address on it, are these lots that this guy has a stamp, even though it's 14 years old, which is absurd in itself. But, you know, still, he is taking responsibility for all these lots that he has no idea even looked at or anything else, because, and I believe you, as your company, could actually be a problem with all these permits, being that the person that was designated to do the inspections and the engineer of record signed off to do the inspections wasn't the one that actually did the inspections. So, you know, I mean, that's a big problem here. This guy has responsibilities on these things that he has no idea that even exist. And that's, you know, and that's the issue with, you know, reusing this. This really should have been restamped every single time, because what you did was you took a signed document and you changed information in the document. The document that this was stamped wasn't the document that he signed. The document he signed said project address, something completely different, whatever it was.
No, it was just Barcelona, yeah.
So this would be like taking any document, any signed legal document, and going and changing the wording of it without notifying the person who signed it that you changed all this stuff. I mean, even if he would have initialed these or something, had some knowledge of it, but, you know, this is just, I mean, you know, it's just plain forgery on every single one of these that was done, because information was changed that he was not aware of.
Well, but once again, the document he signed was for Barcelona, and every single lot is inside of Barcelona.
I know, but the document that he signed did not have all this typewritten stuff up there.
I would agree that it would have been a bad violation, if I would have down below added another geotechnical company that he didn't know about. That would have been, I would think, a real fraudulent thing.
But in essence, you did.
But
I mean, you didn't change the name here, but you didn't use this company.
Well, but what we were doing was we were providing the inspection. And City of Phoenix was totally happy with that inspection being done. And so City of Phoenix, you know, we didn't really understand their document. But I can tell you, City of Phoenix didn't understand their own document, because they are accepting both of them at the same time, house after house after house, and never looking and never comparing these two and saying, wait a minute, Providence, this document says this company should be doing the inspection, but you're providing an inspection by a different engineering firm. And so it's not like we were trying to escape something or like we were trying to save something. It's just for whatever reason, which once again, I have no idea why the decision was made amongst the employees way back when to do that. But it's not like we were trying to sneak anything by. We were giving the forms to City of Phoenix. They were happy with the forms. And I can tell you, yeah, we didn't understand this document. But Phoenix apparently didn't understand it either.
And only two are printed, too. Even once this came to light and the city asked for a new form, updated forms, going forward, even since last year, we've done this according to what the city's asked and even what the engineers we're currently using are asking. And so we've made those changes and made those corrections and are aware of the misunderstanding that we have.
Yeah, I guess I'm concerned for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is that it doesn't seem like we're totally on the same page on the fact that modifying something that someone signed without their consent is not appropriate. I mean, whether it's got an address or something else, I mean, if you have a contract, you can modify a word on it without letting the other party initial it. I don't understand why you would think it's appropriate to do that.
And I don't think it's appropriate.
Okay.
And but my point I've been making with that is that I had no idea that this form even existed, even though I own the company and run the company. In the days that this started, I had 25 employees in my office, and I had layers of employees between us. 2008, when the recession changed all of that, but I had no idea that that was going on. But I agree.
And I understand.
Had I seen that decision, I would have handled it totally differently.
And I understand. And but again, as we've said before, just not understanding something is not the reason. And, you know, I have 50 people in my Tucson office, and I do worry about what they do. And, you know, ultimately it comes up to you. You're the
yes,
owner.
I understand.
My other concern is that Mr. Weaver mentioned on his testimony to the board that he found that not only had the old seals been provided, but that there was also signatures at the bottom where it says special inspection program reviewed by development services, and then there's a name and a date. And he said he hadn't done that. And so if we, on page, I found several, so, but for instance, 4291 of our packet, there's a signature at the bottom from James Weaver from May of 2017. And then if you go to page 4300 is the same thing, and 4307 is the same thing.
Yeah, and that
and those look different than his signature too, by
right,
the way.
But that being said too, that signature wasn't supposed to be, if you read that, that's supposed to be the building official that signs off on that, not Mr. Yeah. Weaver. So, and obviously this was done at a later date, so that in itself was a straight forgery right there. You know, because the building official is supposed to sign that line, you know, basically acknowledging that they got this form. But someone, you know, someone has taken upon themselves to sign Mr. Weaver's name down there that obviously wasn't Mr. Weaver because it does not belong on that line.
Can I address that?
Yeah.
Unbeknownst. Because once this document was submitted to Phoenix, when we went to pull a building permit, our superintendent would go by and pull the building permit, and we would never see this document again. Our superintendent, as he was proceeding the subdivision, there came a point when apparently the inspector on site from City of Phoenix said, I need to have this signed by your engineer. It was the inspector wanted that engineer's signature on the bottom. Our employee fraudulently, wrongfully, and totally on his own accord started signing that. And we took disciplinary actions against the employee for doing that, and I called Jim Weaver and sincerely apologized to him for that happening. We had no idea. Because once this document was completed out in the field, it was handed to the City of Phoenix inspector. We never see it. It never comes in our office. We would never even know that was going on. But I agree. That was a fraudulent action. Should never have taken place. We disciplined the employee for doing that. And I apologize to Mr. Weaver and apologize that it never took place.
How did you discipline him?
We had some monetary discipline, the money that was supposed to go to him that we did not allow him to have.
But he still works for us.
He still works for us.
Jesus.
Yeah, and his reasoning for doing it was a weak reason. It's just the inspector wanted it. I didn't know what else to do. He says, so I signed it.
That's cause for huge concerns for me. I mean, because if the first thing you think about when they ask you to provide a signed inspection is to forge somebody else's signature, that's a disqualifier on my end. So this is a serious case, and I don't know. I appreciate you being, again, honest and forthright. But
it was heartbreaking to me when I saw that our employee did that. I mean, my heart just sank, and that's why I called Jim Weaver and had a long talk with him, because it was, you know, there's just no excuse for that.
Is the employee a registrant and any discipline?
No.
I agree. I'm at total loss on this one. I mean, this is completely egregious on several levels.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have concerns about this being done. I have concerns about all these houses that were inspected by some other firm that the engineer record or, you know, the engineer that was supposed to be doing it hasn't signed off on. I mean, this is a whole can of worms. It's a whole mess. And
well, it is a can of worms. But just if there's any silver lining, they did have an engineer that actually did the inspections and signed some certificate. So the homeowner, I think...
Well, an inspection firm did the inspections. Do we know, I mean, but we don't know anything about them, I don't believe, at least on this case.
Were the inspections actually done by or overseen by a professional or just by an inspection company?
They were by an engineering firm. And so we did our best effort to make sure we had it qualified. But I understand the firm that was involved is a firm that is in trouble right now. But we have had no idea.
Oh, it's the firm that had a registrant that didn't work for them anymore stamping the certificates.
Correct. 40 properties that Barcelona developed fraudulently sealed by that firm owner.
Yeah.
And submitted.
So you thought you were at least getting an engineer, but you really weren't. So this property owners do have a risk that they never had anybody do the inspections that should have been doing them.
Chair, of the 600, I'm assuming the number is close to 600.
Yeah, yes.
There are 40 that are still in question. All the others were done by a registrant with another company.
Now, there's been several hundred that haven't been done over the last 3 or 4 years.
Not at all. I guess I'm just wondering, can we request that whoever did the inspection provide some kind of backup just to protect those homeowners? I mean, if they are legitimate structural engineer, has the experience to go out and do those inspections, can we at least request that there is some protection for those homeowners?
That wasn't the scope of our investigation.
I'm not sure if we could even do that. I mean, you know, the city of Phoenix probably could.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of this stuff was, you know, even though the city of Phoenix let it go, I mean, these were permits that were pulled for these houses with fraudulent documents. You know, it's kind of fruit of the poison tree. I mean, it's, you know, you took a fraudulent document to get a permit. From there on, I mean, the whole thing should be been suspect.
Yes, Scott, can you provide any
advice?
Can I just add that we did request all the documents submitted by Barcelona that they submitted to the city, requested that from the city. I did take the time to find out which properties and addresses belong to Barcelona. And 473 of those addresses belong to them, where they utilize Mr. Gala's and Mr. Weaver's
signature.
Of those 40 properties, in review, pertain to a different case that we're going to be talking about a little bit, that were fraudulently sealed, those follow-up inspections. The other ones, they had the registrant working for that company legitimately. So the 40 properties, the other case, were the ones that we were able to discover.
So all the other properties did have a firm doing the inspection that had a registrant?
I mean, the firm that we have another case on, of those, had another registrant sealing it. We didn't look into whether or not, because they were registered at that time, the firm was, so.
Just as a sidebar, for staff, I mean, you guys have done great work on all these cases. One thing that would make it easier for me to follow things, because for instance today we have several related cases throughout the agenda, is if there was a note at the beginning where you have the synopsis or somewhere in there that says related cases, number this, status this, because as I went through them I found, did we take action against this person or against this issue, and that would make it easier. That would be very helpful. So, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, may I make just one comment?
Absolutely.
You know, and this is a situation where we had a document that Phoenix wanted to turn in every time. Not being registrant, not being familiar with the rules of engineers and engineer stamps. I know that ignorance is not an excuse from the law. We had no idea that there was really much, even a leaking on this thing or in our office, that this was a serious issue. You know, we knew that the City of Phoenix wanted the inspection done. We did our best effort to hire a professional company to do the inspection. It's not like we were doing anything to save ourselves anything in this. We were doing what we thought was the expedient thing that Phoenix wanted and what they were happy with, and we were just trying to roll forward and conduct business and build homes and do it as best we possibly could. And so I just want you, hope you understand that this was done with no malice, no attempt to try to deceive anyone. And like I mentioned, this came to light to Jim Weaver because Tommy called Jim Weaver to say, hey, we need your help with this new form that Phoenix is wanting right now. And right. So we apologize that it happened, but it was not meant to be anything for our own gain or benefit.
Understood. Thank you.
I don't know. Who's the alleger on this case?
James Weaver.
Oh, James Weaver? Okay.
Official alleger.
Jason, would you know, is it typical that jurisdictions request this on an individual site basis as opposed to whole subdivisions?
Well, I don't know about, I mean, we don't do residential subdivisions, but, you know, all the jobs that we do, individual jobs, yes, we sign one of these for every single one that needs inspection. And, you know, we list ourselves as the inspector, and we do the inspections, and at the end of the job, we sign off with a final letter stating we looked at all of this stuff and, you know, and stamp that, stating that everything was done in accordance with the drawings. That's the point of the inspections. You know, that, and these were, you know, these were geotechnical inspections for the soils underneath the slabs, and then the civil was the tensioning of the cables,
yeah.
You know, which is, that's what's holding up the foundation, you know, for these post-tension slabs. So, I mean, these are critical components of these houses. You know, and you know, if they end up with earth movement issues or anything else, you know, that's why this thing's a whole mess. Because you have inspections that were completed by a different firm, but not by the firm that the permit was pulled on. That's the big thing. And you know, regardless of, you know, oh, we had someone else do it, but they should have signed another certificate like that. The engineer record should have signed it saying we're assigning it to ABC Inspections or whoever they are, and then, you know, read through the reports, made sure that everything was done correctly, that, you know, proper compaction was done, you know, proper tensioning of cables was done, all that stuff, and at the end, signed off on it saying, yes, all this stuff was completed correctly in accordance with the drawings. Right now, I mean, just by the information we have here, I have no confidence, who knows, if any of it was done correctly.
Don't you find it that post-tension slabs for a home are unusual?
No,
they're pretty typical these days.
Yeah, it's around here.
Soil is so bad.
Mr. Paulson?
If I could add one thing. We do these inspections in every community we build in. And we've built over 5,000 homes over the years, and mostly everything was East Valley. Barcelona was our first time to ever build in Phoenix. We've never come across a form, this form, or anything like it in the other municipalities. What they ask is just for the inspection to be done by a certified company at the end, and they collect the inspections, but they don't have this document up front, you know, specifying this information. And so, yeah, we do the inspections everywhere. This was unique to Phoenix to have this form turned in up front. And which was, once again, it's unique to Phoenix, but then Phoenix didn't enforce it.
Okay. So I see two issues similar to the previous case, which is, I mean, one, how do we notify and protect the public or whoever's, you know, affected by it? And two, what's the appropriate discipline for this, or penalty?
Something we could table and go into executive session next month.
Do you have any questions? If you need legal advice, yes, we can definitely go into executive session. If it's just to discuss the merit of the case, we shouldn't.
Can you provide any clarity?
clarity with regards to what? I can answer legal questions.
Okay. Hang on a second, Mr. Colton, see if...
I'm with you.
So how many lots are up in the air that don't have a qualified...
I think the problem is we don't know for sure.
And that's not really the point. That's not really the point. Staff's identified the point of this is like this was fraudulent use of steam. Right. That's what the...
Yeah. It's right. Really that's when it's helm to it.
That's what the case is. That's
like terms of notifying anybody.
Get through the weeds.
Yeah, and it's not just... Yeah, I understand the issue. I mean, it should be clear that you shouldn't use the signature from 14 years ago for a specific lot. But even if we leave that aside, there's still the issue of someone forging his name at the bottom of an inspection form recently. So it's not just ignorance. That's willful. That part is willful.
Well, and also changing the typed written part at the top of the document.
Altering a sealed document, professional right. document.
Which would be another violation.
Right.
Altering a sealed document. I don't see it any different than if you stamp a set of drawings and someone goes in there and whites out a bunch of stuff and, writes in their own stuff.
So for discussion, I think, obviously, if we take every lot as an individual violation, we could assess hundreds of thousands of dollars in penalties. I don't think that's the goal here. I don't think we want to go, $500, but I'm saying what's going to make this better is not just putting a huge number on it because, we're not going to get anywhere, and I don't think that changes anything.
Right, and I would agree with that, okay. But I don't think this is a slap on the wrist kind of thing.
I agree.
I think there's more legal issues beyond our board that are involved with this, than what's going on, just here. So, especially the forgery and things like that on the document. I think that's a very serious issue that's happened.
Beyond that, though, Jason, does the City of Phoenix need to be contacted? We've talked to other municipalities in the past about it.
I'm guessing Mr. Weaver's already let City of Phoenix know.
We spoke to the city as well.
But I think we should have, and maybe this is already in there, Mr. Hunt, but I got lost in the 5,969 pages.
Right, I apologize.
do we have clear accounting of specific lot, who did the inspection, and has it been checked by an actual engineer? I think that's really what we need to know. Because we know the 40 that have issues.
Right. I can tell you just based on that information from those 40 and other ones that company had done, is that they have trained, my understanding is they train inspectors to go out and review the material that's done once everything's laid. And then that information is sent back to their office where the engineer reviews the information and stamps it for that specific company. Now, there are other properties that we have evidence of that there was a legitimate engineer that did go out and review the site and stamp and sign his own material with a statement. That's not included in this form. Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be the engineer that goes out there.
It could be a technician.
I, as an engineer, can hire a completely separate firm and list them as the special inspector. As long as they do the work and it comes back to me to review and to verify that it's done.
You need to know that they're properly trained, that they know their job.
Right.
And
my company, I don't have to do it personally. My company doesn't have to do it. That's not what that form says. That form says this company is qualified to do this and I will review, all the work that is completed by them.
And ultimately the purpose of having you sign up on it is it's your responsibility if something goes wrong.
Right. You're the one that needs to check.
If you want to trust somebody to go out there, you better know that they're doing the work right.
Right.
So,
which is why our company sends our own guys out. I would never stipulate another company because I know who my inspectors are. And I have, faith in them to do it correctly, and I get immediate results back, and if there's a problem, they call. In this case, it's just, willy-nilly on some of this stuff. But that being said, the big problem with this just goes back, what the whole case is about. It's unlawful use of a, registered stamp or modifying a document, a signed and sealed document.
All
So I guess the big thing is just, you know, how kind of determine what, you know, I believe there's clear violation. I don't think that's up in the air. I think it's just what is going to be the, you know, what is going to be the offered consent agreement on this. Yeah. I mean, we know assurance of discontinuance is going to be in there, for sure. Cost investigation is